Good evening, everybody. Welcome to March 13th council meeting. Thanks very much. Let us establish a quorum tonight, and let us know for the record all members of council are present. And tonight we'll start out. Noah, you want to announce our moment of silence, and I'll follow.
Yes, I had a request from a member of the public to tonight in the moment of silence remember three longtime locals, one Elvin Urquhart, Billy Lester, and Mike Horton, who none of who I had the pleasure of knowing, but do understand that they had a long-term connection to Morro Bay and many who do live here.
And I'd like to add to our just recognize and moment of silence in honor of two police officers from Santa Cruz that left us, Detective Sergeant Butch Baker and Detective Elizabeth Butler. So please join us in a moment of silence. Thank you. Tonight, Nancy, would you lead us in a Pledge of Allegiance?
Please stand. Ready, begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And under mayor and council member announcements, I was going to ask our police chief to do some announcements for our annual police dinner and the awards that took place. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor, City Council. Last Friday, a week ago Friday, we held our award ceremony, and it's actually a department meeting. We do it annually. And I'm happy to announce the folks that were the recipients of the awards. And first was the sworn employee of the year, which was Sergeant Rick Catlett. Our non-sworn employee of the year was dispatcher Megan Smallwood. And our volunteer of the year was our range master, Ian McKnight. Each three of those individuals were voted on as the employees of the year by their peers, which is quite an honor. We also awarded three chief's commendations, and those awards are presented for outstanding performance by members of our department in carrying out their duties. Two of the individuals were instrumental in capturing the bank robber in 2012 in November of Founders Bank, and that was Detective Dale Cullum and Officer Gene Stewart, Corporal Mark Martin and Officer Sean Jessen. Performed life-saving efforts during an RV fire that was just outside of our city limits. They assisted Morro Bay Fire Department on that call. And finally, Sergeant Dave Berganzel and Officer Casey Thomas also performed life-saving efforts for a victim of an overdose. I'm very proud to make this announcement, and thank you very much for giving me the opportunity.
Thank you, Chief Christie. It was a pleasure to be invited, and we wanted to recognize our police department. Thank you. And as far as announcements go on, George, do you have any announcements? Christine?
Good evening, everyone. I just wanted to make a few brief announcements. Remind everyone that this Saturday, March 16th, is the Estero Bay Community Pool Foundation Benefit, and it's at the historic Boradori Garage, I'm not sure I pronounced it correctly, in Cayucas. And if you would like to attend, you do need to get tickets in advance. So please call 995-3036. And I'm sure they would be happy to take your money. And then just in general, I'd like people to know that it's time to play ball, and Central Coast Little League has their opening ceremonies this Saturday at Lila Kaiser Park. So good luck to our Little League boys and girls. And then also just to let you know that last Friday, on behalf of the city, I was able to attend the second annual State of the State event. It was sponsored by the SLO Chamber of Commerce, and they bring folks here from Sacramento to SLO County to talk to us about the various government activities that are either happening or not happening in Sacramento. So we had a great slew of speakers. They talked about everything from healthcare to the ballot initiatives, and then also we had Bob Huff, who's the Senate Minority.
Which benefits Morro Bay Community Foundation. That's at the community center, and I'll bet Mr. Woods could tell you where and how to get tickets and how much they are.
If you'd like me to do that now, I could.
Go ahead, yeah.
You can get tickets at the Morro Bay Community Center, at the senior center, where you pay your utility bills. The dinner starts at 4:30, and it's on the 22nd of March, and it is all being held at the Morro Bay Community Center.
Thank you, Noah.
Yeah, thank you. I have a couple of announcements. One is in regards to something that a resident contacted me about called, it's an event worldwide called Earth Hour, which started in 2007 by the World Wildlife Fund in Sydney, Australia, and the idea is to try to generate awareness about the planet and the environment. And basically, it's a very simple concept of 1 hour, everyone agrees to turn off their lights wherever they are in the world for that hour. And 2007, this idea started, and they had over 2.2 million participants in Australia. And since then, it's grown to 2012, where there was 7,000 cities that participated and millions of people throughout the world. And supposedly, the astronauts that were in space at the time participated by monitoring the planet and watching the light from the planet, the human-generated lights, and they were able to observe the Earth Hour event in 2012. So that's coming up. 2013 is going to be March 23rd, Saturday, from 8:30 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. And basically the idea is just turn off your lights for that time and find some way to enjoy yourself. And if you'd like more information, you can go to earthhour.org, and that's part of the World Wildlife Fund project. So sounds like a good time. And then a couple of other announcements. One is our public services director, Rob Livick, is involved with an integrated regional water management plan update, which is countywide. It's basically trying to develop a better planning process and understanding about water needs, supply, conservation options, stewardship, and it's broken down into regions within the county. And Mr. Livick and Adrian Harris from the National Estuary Program are two local representatives. But there we will be hosting a North Coast input session, two of them. One's going to be March 21st from 1:30 to 3. That's a Thursday. And then the second's going to be March 25th, also 1:30 to 3 on a Monday. And I'd like to pass it over to Rob to speak a little more about this.
Just a slight correction on those times. Due to a conflict with another meeting, we're meeting from 1 to 3 on both those days. So the meeting will start at 1. The first meeting on the 21st is intended to solicit input from disadvantaged communities that are in the area. And this area is the North Coast District of the county, so it covers basically from Los Osos all the way up to the Monterey County line, from the ridge to the ocean is kind of the general area. And the second meeting is the general meeting to discuss the what we finally call the earworm plan, the IRWM plan. So integrated regional water management plan. So we'll be looking for public input at both those meetings and look forward to seeing people there. Thank you.
Thank you. And if someone has questions, they can contact you at your office?
Yes. Public Services, 772-6261. My direct line, which so you don't have to navigate the phone system, 772-6569.
And it was the Vets Hall?
Yes, it is at the Vets Hall.
Okay, thank you. And the last announcement is we will be having our joint powers agreements meeting with Cayucas on the 14th. That's Thursday. This Thursday, 6 p.m. here at the community center here in Morro Bay, at the Morro Bay Community Center.
Thank you. And with that, we have a closed session report, Rob.
Yes, good evening. Prior to the regular session, council met in closed session to discuss labor negotiations with the police, fire, and SEIU, and no action was taken on that item that requires reporting. The council also met in closed session with the labor negotiations with regards to the city manager and the city attorney. As to those two items, also no action was taken that requires reporting under the Brown Act.
Thank you. And we're prior to going to public comment, we have a proclamation to present, and I was wondering if we could pull A9 and get approval for that so we can present the proclamation. Any motion to can I have a motion to autism affects all persons regardless of race, religion, socioeconomic status, or geography. And whereas the incidence of autism in San Luis Obispo County reflects the national rate of 1 in 110, with rates appearing to have increased similarly around the globe. And whereas a child is diagnosed with autism every 20 minutes. And whereas ASDs are the fastest growing serious developmental disability, making these disorders more common than pediatric cancer, diabetes, and AIDS combined. And whereas many are not adequately informed about ASDs and the value and importance of early identification, assessment, and treatment of these disorders. And whereas individuals with ASDs and their families face tremendous and overwhelming challenges in assessing and navigating the complex programs and services for these disorders. And whereas parents and family members have made invaluable contributions through their commitment, caring, and advocacy to import advances in research, education, treatment for individuals with ASDs. Whereas individuals with ASDs are valuable and talented citizens. Whereas Central Coast Autism Spectrum Center will celebrate Autism Awareness Month in April 2013. And whereas the Central Coast Autism Spectrum Center will celebrate Autism Awareness Month at the Walk for Autism and Autism Awareness Fair on April 28, 2013 in Mission Plaza. And whereas Autism Awareness Month and the Walk for Autism and Autism Awareness Fair help to increase and develop knowledge of autism and are of paramount importance in creating an empathetic and compassionate citizenry. Now, there be it resolved that the Central Coast Autism Spectrum Center, in cooperation with City of Morro Bay, affirms its commitment to the important issue described in this resolution by declaring April 2013 as Autism Awareness Month and emphasizes that every individual with an ASD is a valued and important member of our society. And be it further resolved that the City of Morro Bay recognizes and commends the talents, abilities, and contributions of the individuals in our community diagnosed with ASDs. And be it further resolved that the City of Morro Bay recognizes and commends the parents and relatives of the individuals with ASDs, the professionals that provide valued services, and the Central Coast Autism Spectrum Center for the sacrifice and dedication in providing for the special needs of individuals with ASD. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the City Council of the City of Morro Bay does hereby declare April 2013 as Autism Awareness Month. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
All right, would you like to sit and talk about this at all?
Looks like you have a busy agenda here.
Okay, all right. Well, thanks very much, Mark.
Thank you.
All
right, I'd like to say thank you to you and the members of the City Council and the community of Morro Bay. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks, Mark.
Thanks.
Mark and I were former employees. That was the first time I've seen him in I don't know how many years now, but as yeah.
It's the job.
Thank you, Mark. All right. That was great. Okay, folks. Now the very important part of our meeting. We open it up for public comment. We open up for 3 minutes. Please state your name and come to the podium. We're glad to hear from you.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, council members. My name is Marlis McPherson. I'm a resident of Morro Bay, and I'm not here tonight to complain about anything or to ask for anything. I'm here in my capacity as chair of the Morro Bay Winter Bird Festival to thank you, the council, the city, the staff, and for your support and your sponsorship of our Bird Festival. We had the most successful festival ever. We had record attendance, 546 people registered. 70% of them came from outside the county to spend 4 days with us here looking at nature. And that doesn't include Family Day. Family Day, which was Saturday, people don't have to register for that, so we don't know exactly how many people came. But the museum where Family Day was held had 450 people come through its doors, which was the most in a single day in their 50-year history. So I just wanted to thank you, and I also wanted to tell you that we just did an evaluation, and people still love to come here. And when they come here, they spend money. And I had an email from a woman who said that she came from out of state, and she and her family stayed here for a week and spent $2,100. Mm-hmm. And that's just one person. So thank you all, and thank our leaders also and volunteers for making it so successful. Thank you.
Thank you.
So come on in before March 27th and sign up. Sellers, it costs $10 per individuals or $30 for business or organizations who will get a bold listing with their name and two lines. This will put you on the treasure map and get your official yard sale sign, and you get the satisfaction of knowing that you have helped support this great event. Buyers, get your treasure map at Highway 41 Antiques at 520 Atascadero Road, yard sale headquarters. And I'll also be in the Bay News. That shit comes out April 3rd, Wednesday. Morro Bay Beautiful is having its own fundraising yard sale at 2360 North Main Street next to Domino's Pizza. So we are looking for donations of wonderful items that you would like to recycle. Just call Wanda at 772-3632 after March 20th. Then we have two other very special features. One from the estate of one of our famous residents, Jack LaLanne. Donated by his lovely wife, Elaine, we have Jack's memorabilia, books, exercise tapes, shirts, etc., and a custom surfboard worth over $700 made by their son. The memorabilia items will be raffled off and awarded to some lucky winner on Saturday, April 7th at 1 p.m. The custom surfboard, we've decided to sell only 7 raffle tickets at $10 per ticket. It will be drawn as soon as we have all 70 tickets sold. That's pretty good odds. I see you smiling, Noah.
Yeah, right.
But that's not all new for this year. We have DocuTeam of San Luis Obispo will provide free document shredding up to 4 boxes per household. So clean out your old filing cabinets and old tax returns and bring them to the Morro Bay Beautiful's annual yard sale site at 2360 North Main Street during the yard sale on Saturday only.
Hank,
between 8 and 2.
Before you go, you said 7 tickets. Was it supposed to be 70 tickets?
70 raffle tickets.
There you go. You said
Thank
7.
You.
Yeah. I think you had some excited people
70.
Out there. Yeah.
All right.
Hank,
okay.
Hank, by the way, what's the record?
What's the record of?
You said you. The,
oh well, we're going to try to hit 250. So come on, guys, come on down and sign up.
Thanks, Hank.
Thank you.
Anyone else for public comment?
Good evening, Council. My name is Brad Snook. I'm the chair of Surfrider San Luis Obispo. Tonight I'd like to speak about agenda item D3, the schedule for tasks for the new wastewater recycling facility. In a nutshell, Surfrider hopes the council will support a bolder vision than is illustrated in the schedule. As you know, the settlement agreement with the Regional Water Quality Control Board set a timeline for an update to occur as fast as possible, which was eight years at that time. Proposed here is an additional 7 years on top of the 7 years that has already passed. 14 years, according to this proposed schedule. According to this schedule, the JPA will have to renew its modified NPDES permit 2 more times before the plant is complete. The Water Board could decide to enforce the timeline of the settlement agreement and issue fines. While Surfrider supports a robust public process and allowance of time needed to incorporate wastewater recycling into the project, this timeline of 7 more years seems too extended. Furthermore, on this schedule, every single council member's term ends before CEQA review is slated to be complete. By then, it's impossible, or it's possible a whole new council with a whole new vision will be in place. Surfrider believes the vision of this council needs to move forward at a speedy but deliberate pace to ensure sufficient progress toward a wastewater recycling project before 2017. Thank you.
Thank you, Brad.
Good evening, everybody. Gary Johnson, resident of Morro Bay. I got two important announcements. The ones you see on the screen right now is that we're scheduled for our Morro Photo Expo, our fourth annual. Unfortunately, we're going to have to postpone it till September because we are moving from one nonprofit organization to another, and our great IRS has not sent us the form yet so we can buy insurance. So we decided, talking to a local lawyer, that we're going to postpone it, so stay tuned. Most importantly, I want to say that some of it's kind of sad in some ways, but our salesman at her, not salesman, you can pick them up at her restaurant and take them directly to the post office. So for $14.85, it's really neat. Now, the women, too, need a lot, you know, women and their hygiene. They really need a lot of things they can't get now because some of the PXs aren't supplying them. Now, on the front cover, it says buy baby wipes, beef jerky, energy bars, and trail mix. He puts that on every package, so don't pay any attention to that. But the name of the soldier is on the front cover, and it I'll spell Cy's name is T-E-N-E-N-B-E-R-G. Now, one letter was sent from one of the soldiers. Though that they have on the behalf of the team, I would like to tell you your generous support over the holidays. I think the team received 30 boxes. Snacks have been appreciated over the past week. I'm writing to you as time permits to thank everyone personally. Right now we're having our third snowfall, and the letter goes on and on and on. Cy is sending 30 to 60 boxes a week. You can go to the dollar store. This is very important. Go to the dollar store, buy anything you want, put it in the box in front of the cashier.
Thanks, Gary.
And he comes in every week.
Thank you.
Or almost every day.
Welcome.
Good evening. My name is Dan Podesto. I'm a business owner, resident, and president of Morro Bay Fourth. First, I'd just like to make an announcement to all the residents that our group, Morro Bay Fourth, is in the process of fundraising and planning for the upcoming 4th of July. It's on the 4th of July this year. It's the annual celebration and picnic in the city. Our committee is actively looking for volunteers to join our group. We always need help planning and carrying out the events, the fundraisers. And then, of course, the day of, it's a big production. We welcome anyone who can commit any amount of time, whether it's an hour a month or 8 hours a day, whatever you can commit, we'd gladly accept your volunteer time. We do appreciate it. We need help planning kids' activities, help organizing food vendors. We always need help fundraising, and there's so much more than just that. Our next meeting will be Friday, March 22nd at noon. We try to keep it to just an hour, a lunch hour, so that it can accommodate business people as well as those who have more free time than that. We meet at the Embarcadero Grill upstairs. It's the first and third Friday, in case you can't make this upcoming meeting. I would also like to let you know that we are also looking forward to planning some dates for our annual fundraisers. The first is the Morro Bay, or the Oyster and Beer Feast, put on by Mark Tognazzini at Tognazzini's Dockside 2. That date is going to be sometime in May. We haven't finalized it yet. And then we're also working on our third annual wine raffle fundraiser. So those dates will be announced soon. The last thing I'd like to talk about is money related for the event. We have submitted to Rex and Park our request for co-sponsorship, and what we're looking for, and I guess I'm not exactly sure how this request should be directed, so that's why I'm here tonight, is to ask the City Council for some help. We are an all-volunteer organization. We have worked selflessly and tirelessly for the past 3.5 years to plan this annual event. It's a community event. It attracts thousands of our own Morro Bay residents, as well as in-county and out-of-county visitors to Morro Bay. We fill hotel rooms, restaurants, and retail shops for a long holiday weekend. The 4th of July event costs over $40,000 and countless volunteer hours to put on. It provides a great economic boom to the city of Morro Bay, as well as to the businesses of Morro Bay. Over the past 3.5 years, our all-volunteer Morro Bay 4th Committee has worked year-round.
Dan, I'm going to ask you to step down. Thanks.
Okay.
Thank you for coming up and speaking.
What I would like to do is ask for this issue to be agendized for a future meeting.
Okay,
that's great. What I'm looking for.
All right, thank you.
Good evening, Mayor Aarons, council members, and staff. My name is Greg Fry. I live at 1725 Little Morro Creek Road in Morro Bay. I'm here to discuss item D1, the intent to abandon the surplus land adjacent to Toro Lane. My family and I are the new owners of land on Toro Lane adjacent to the surplus land at a public hearing. I look forward to further discussions with the city leaders and any community members to provide for the best use of this surplus land. It is my understanding that a yes vote by the council tonight simply means that they are in favor of starting the abandonment process for the street right-of-way, but not necessarily that they will sell it to my family. Approval of this resolution allows for further discussion in a public forum and investigation into what options are available to the city for this land. A comment by Mr. Schultz may help clarify some of this if I am mistaken. However, if I am correct in my assumption, I am in favor of approval of this resolution tonight in order to move forward with the process of investigation into the various options for this surplus land. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Fry.
Evening, Mayor and Council. Brian Stacy, lifelong resident of Morro Bay. The lost son. I'm here tonight to talk about several things, and I'll try to squeeze them in real quick. First off, comes back to the PG&E seismic surveys and the amount of money that was procured for those and the need for an audit to determine why our city didn't receive mitigation. They did over 2 years worth of seismic surveys, and it should have been a sizable chunk of mitigation. Harbor Board indicated they'd like PG&E to do their own audit. I don't think that's the way to go. I think we need the state auditor to do the audit. State auditor is the guy that does audits, and he'd be the guy for this job. Additionally, I've made all of you aware through several emails, sorry to pester you, but we got a small group of fishermen in this town that seem to get all the information. The rest of us are kind of out in the left field. They're like, it's a small group of people. They take information, and then they get a bunch of money. It seems like there should be a name for that. Additionally, I got to tell a really sad story. So I was trying to cure that last problem a couple years ago. I'm beating on State Lands Commission. I'm like, hey, man, these guys, they get all the information. They steal all the money. And then I'm talking to, McFarland and Detmer and a bunch of people at state level, and I'm talking to the Board of Supervisors, I'm talking to this council. And then earlier that year, I was diagnosed with diverticulitis. I was under the treatment by a doctor for diverticulitis. I go in with a diverticulitis attack, tell them I'm having one. After all that stuff where I'm rattling people, I don't know if there's a connection. They fail to treat me. They leave me laying in the hospital and let me die. I was within 3 hours of dying, and I picked up the phone, and I dialed zero, and I called the operator asking for the antibiotics I went in asking for 7 days earlier. All my organs were hardened, and I was near death within a few hours. Had I not dialed zero, would have been dead. Then I go to Stanford Hospital because Hayashi says you can't reconnect my colon, which is ludicrous. Up there, the guy who taught him to do surgery, Welton, has me sign a waiver saying that I could get a nicked kidney ureter, releases me without testing for that, sends me home. My kidney ureter is nicked. I go back into a different hospital. First hospital was French. I go into Sierra Vista. Abdomen's filling up with fluid. They can't figure out what the fluid is for 10 days. They have a belly drain in me. It's got pee draining into a bag for 10 days. They can't figure it out. They keep me sick for a whole year, wipe out my chance at a medical malpractice suit. I'm still suffering today from all that. It wasn't a real good deal, and it's kind of just coincidental. I was doing all that rattling. Thank you, folks.
Thanks, Brian.
Good evening. My name is Betty Winholtz, and I want to speak to two agenda items this evening. One is A3, and the other one is D1. So before you approve on consent this item, which is a lease site, I would hope that you would ask a few questions. And one of those is, what is the justification for a 40-year lease? Previously, we had decided that length of a lease is probably too long of a lease to have. And for that long, you would assume that there is a considerable investment of money, like literally in the millions of dollars. Yet your lease that's in the staff report does not list what kind of investment there was. So there's no way for the public to know the rationale for why this lengthy lease and at what cost. And I'd like to know, is there anyone else who's been given new leases at that same length? And is it for the same cost? So to know if this is a unique situation or is it comparable to what is going on now. Regarding D1, which is the abandonment that Mr. Fry spoke to earlier, I would have to disagree with him. If you read the agenda, you'll see that the request is for the intention to abandon, not just to have a conversation.
That we really take a real hard look at item D1. And not jump into any quick decision. There's a whole bunch of what ifs, I feel, and I think that we should really give it a good look at all the alternatives that are possible and things we might do. But those things are, if you're wrong, it'll last a long time. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good evening, Bill Martini, Morro Bay. And again, I'm speaking on D1, and I really want to thank you for bringing this forward, because I think what it has brought up is the need for parking in that area. I don't think people are aware that the city had surplus property out in that area. And upon looking at it in the past, I've spoken against not abandoning this property. They just recently had a meeting on the Morro Strand State Park expansion of the hookups down there, and the neighborhood spoke about the parking issues on Beachcomber and all the problems. This is where this property can actually benefit the community out there. It will serve for overflow parking or future parking. You can actually free up Beachcomber for the visual resources and tuck this behind where it's non-visual. A lot of surfers park there on the stub of Beachcomber, where again this would serve for the overflow. I understand even Rob Livick was out there today and mentioned, I believe, what was there, set possibility for 17 parking spaces on the street and maybe 22 on the property itself. So it's a huge asset that could be used for the community. As far as the resolution tonight, I would recommend you not adopting it, because it does, in my eyes, lock you in on the process of abandonment. Let me just read you condition number 2 of the resolution, and it states, the city council does hereby intend to abandon a portion of Toro Lane subject to the following conditions and code requirements. And then it goes on to talk about setting new monuments, the exhibit showing future property lines, private utilities, abandonment will include a reservation. But that sentence alone states that when you sign this resolution, that you are agreeing that you agree with the abandonment. It starts a process. The way I understand it, the final meeting on the abandonment will just talk about the terms and conditions of the sale. So if you want to bring this forward, I don't think it should be brought forward, but don't approve this resolution. Just bring it forward for discussion. This should actually be opened up to the public before it even goes forward. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Barbara Doerr, resident. Past mayor of Redondo Beach, 8 years. City council member, 4. Public employee for the County of Orange, 8 years. I concur with everything that Bill just said. I've read his and Bernadette's letter to you, to the city council, and I concur with everything he has said. I think you should deny this tonight. Stop the process now. Preserve our environment. This is not surplus land. The Coastal Commission looks for, Coastal Conservancy looks for land like this. It's critical to keep that land. I would like to say that I'm disappointed in your actions in closed session. I was there, and I'm sure you know that. It's not a public and open place to hold any public meeting, regular or special meeting of the City Council. I think it's advertised incorrectly. It's a special meeting of the City Council. You have announcement requirements, and no one ever gave the reportable action, whether there was some or there wasn't any, at the end of the meeting, and it should have been in the place where the public meeting was held. The doors are locked. Lucky if you can get in. When you do get in, you're told by the front staff, oh, you can't go into the public meeting. They don't say that, but it's a public meeting. Oh, you can't go in there until you're called. That is not... And you can't discriminate, yet you can choose a place for a public meeting where you won't invite the public to come in and sit down and wait till the meeting is called to order. At the conclusion of each closed session, the agency must reconvene into open session. Must. And that's where you were. It doesn't count here. This is your regular city council meeting established in your guidelines, in your municipal code, in your ordinances. I have an amendment to the minutes, which I'll pass out after my time is done. On the Embarcadero lease at 901-915. I mean, that's an outrageous amount of time. 47 years. I mean, come on, your general plan, it hasn't even been changed, or your local coastal plan to coincide with that. You're going to have a, I would just say, establish a policy on length and terms. Shouldn't be more than 25 years max. Table this item until after your March 20th.
Anybody else for public comment?
Good evening, City Council. Barry Brannon, Morro Bay. I'd like to report on a meeting that I attended at the Cayuga Sanitary Board on March 5th. They had a special meeting, and the special meeting agenda I have here, we're talking about primarily the goal of the meeting was to allow the commissioners, I guess the directors, to, in open session, in open public session, to state their ideas on what they thought that the Cayuga should do going forward. And as I reported last time, they got a budget to hire a consulting firm to assist them in doing this. And at this meeting, they, after the budget was approved last time, this time they decided to hire a firm to go ahead and look at the alternatives. But the key is, was in the, one of the items that I have in their discussion, and their point is that they want to move forward expeditiously. And they want to look at all of the concepts for Cayucas before they commit to go with Morro Bay, which is a very good idea because it does the due diligence that a small group like that should do. And there were was a lot of open discussion back and forth between the directors. And at the end of the meeting, Chairman Enns had a comment that is probably an old comment to some of the people who have been around for a long time. I may have heard of it, but I probably lost it. But he says, you know, it's a lot of work for us to run a wastewater treatment plant for Cayucas, and it's a lot of work for Morro Bay to have it there in the backyard. He said, why don't we just think about maybe putting it up in the Chorro Valley? He says, you know, we really ought to put it up at the California Men's Colony. They have a great plant up there. So I thought that was a really interesting idea. So I got a hold of the technical report that was written when Los Osos was trying to determine what to do with their wastewater. And they investigated the capability of the CMC plant. And it's very interesting because the plant presently handles 1.5 million gallons a day, which is about what we're going to do. They have a pretty good size footprint. They have a permit to discharge into the creek. And one of their problems is they have to dump, they call it 0.75 cubic feet per second. Well, what is that? It's about 450,000 gallons a day is their minimum discharge into that creek to keep the flow going for the fish and for all the other habitat. So if we were to put our waste about 5 miles up there, I estimate it's about a $10 million to pipe it up there. We'll build a plant on their property, and then we become basically their customers. Cayucas becomes their customers. It wasn't my idea. This was President N's idea. So I just wanted to pass that along to you and to the public, and I think it's thinking outside of the box, and I encourage you when you have your workshops to do the same thing. Thank you.
Thank you.
For the light.
Oh, thanks, Jamie. Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor and Council members and staff. Susan Stewart. I'm a 25-year resident of Morro Bay, a 6-year business owner. Couple things. One, I attended, as you know, your goal-setting meeting last night. Just wanted to commend you all on a really good job. It was a long meeting. But it was very positive. I think everybody worked together well. I was really pleased to see all of the staff heads in attendance as well. Gave me a good feeling. I hope you guys feel positive about it too. There were very few incidences of people falling on their swords, which is a good thing. I think you've created some good large goals to move forward with, and I'm excited to see what happens as you sort of drill down into your objectives and the real tangible things that we can do in the next few years. Obviously, there's big things. Big things have to happen that are going to take many more years, but I'm excited. I'm really proud to be a part of this community because obviously government at most levels doesn't work this well. So good job, everybody. Another thing, I wanted to help Dan a little bit, tag on to what he was talking about with the 4th of July. This is a community event. It's a free event. It does, I think, help the entire community, and, you know, it's patriotic. It's the 4th of July. So business owners, residents, visitors, all sorts of people appreciate this event. It is expensive. The primary cost, I think, is the fireworks. But the city services fees are about 10% of those costs, about $4,000, say. So if there's any way the city can help with those fees, waiving the costs,
something fun, but they can't get it together to fix dinner or go to dinner and then go to a show. This is a one-stop shop this Friday night, and you're all invited. We'll start serving dinner at 5:30. We're doing various dishes, vegan to omnivore, and then the music will be at 7, and these performers are incredible. I heard them again. They are just magic. So it's going to be a great evening, and I really hope you all will come. I do have some extra flyers I'm going to leave on the table. I'd really love it if all of the department heads would take them back to their departments and encourage all of the people who work in the offices that are the tired ones on Friday night that would like to go out but don't know what to do, and let them know about it. On another note, last time I was here, I talked about the car show, and I talked about the sock hop, and maybe some of you were imagining what a sock hop would be like. And I have to tell you, you're just going to have to keep imagining, because I'm not going to be able to pull off a sock hop with everything I'm doing. Aww. But 2 weeks later, it's Fundraiser Follies, and we're doing 50s. So at least, you know, the locals, maybe the car show people won't get their 50s hit, but everybody else can. However, I'd still really like to encourage everyone in town to get into 50s outfits for the car show. And I just started thinking as I came up here tonight that I may still try to organize during the car show a poodle skirt contest and best ducktail. So, you know, there's more fun to be had, and we're starting this Friday, and I wish you a very good meeting. Thank you, folks.
Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor Irons and council members. My name is Kathy Novak, and I'm here tonight representing the applicants for item D1 for the abandonment of Toro Lane. For my presentation tonight, I'm hoping that I can provide some clarity to the issue at hand. The city ultimately obtained the piece of property along Toro Lane after the state determined that in 1963 that this property in Toro Lane was not required for the construction of Highway 1. Toro Lane is designated as in the city circulation element as a residential local street. A right-of-way, which means to make way over a piece of land for the purpose of transportation, was also transferred to the city. The council is requested to take action on the abandonment or vacation of this area under the Streets and Highways Code. In the code, it specifically states that the local entity can vacate the right-of-way completely, partly, or terminate the public's rights to use of a street, a highway, or a public service easement. I am mentioning this specifically because it is important to differentiate between the vacation of a street or highway and a public service easement. This request is to abandon the right-of-way for the purpose for use as a public street or a highway, since it has never been developed as a street. The request does not terminate the public service easement, which is by the use for the public other than a street or highway purpose. In addition, it's important to note that the Street and Highways Code allows the city, as part of the abandonment process, to reserve an easement and right to construct, maintain, operate, replace, remove, and renew vehicular or non-vehicular trails for the use by the public. It further states that the proceeding to vacate a street or highway that the city can determine for public convenience and necessity that the easement reserving the right-of-way or a public service easement can be included. Now, with that said, the resolution that's before the council this evening covers the following things. One is that approval of this resolution is for only the intent to abandon the street right-of-way. Two, this resolution does not make the abandonment final. Three, it includes a public service easement that will allow the council to use this easement area for public purposes in the future. Four, it includes an easement for various public utilities. Five, a public hearing is set for April 23rd to consider the final abandonment, the coastal development permit, environmental determination, and alternative options. And six, and last, it does not authorize the council to sell all or a portion of this property. Furthermore, the applicant has submitted an alternative option to the council that will provide additional public benefits above and beyond that currently exist. Approving this resolution tonight will afford them the opportunity to present this idea in a public forum and to address the concerns that have been raised by the public to date. In conclusion, I would like to say that for the above reasons that the applicant feels it is within the city's best interest to approve Resolution 18-13 that only initiates this process and provides for more public opportunities. That concludes my presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Kathy.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Linda Merrill. I agree with all the people who have said they do not want D1 to be passed tonight. Please do not continue with this process without more public input. Most of us who live in that area know that this is a valuable piece of property. And I think you're selling us short if you...
Mobile home parking areas, and they were talking about they could put the access amount of people onto Beachcomber, saying that, okay, there's only enough room in one of those 40, whatever size, 40-foot-long mobile homes, and if they have a vehicle that they're towing or if they have friends visiting... The state guy said that, oh, they can just park up on Embarcadero. It kind of seems like the city of Morro Bay is kind of not looking at the fact that the community puts up with a lot here with the vacationers and all the things that they do. We need it. We need it desperately. But we also need access to the beach ourselves. right now at the north end of Embarcadero, right below the Toro property, you have people parking on both sides of the street there. There's about enough for eight cars. And it doesn't happen all the time because that's a unique area. It's only when the wind's up, only when the surf's up. So you have to be there all the time. You have to see what's going on there. And if those cars all park, they're parking in front of, there's three homes right there. They're parking right in front of those people's homes on both sides of the street because they have access there to the dunes, which aren't protected. And they can blow up their windsurfing kites on the dune. So you've got all this congestion. You've got them pulling out of that area because they're so parked in there, they can't really see where they're going when they come back out. You've got no stop sign on Toro, which is one of the most popular streets in that whole area because everybody goes up to walk their dogs. You got no stop sign there. You got people coming down off of the highway not thinking that somebody's going to pull out of that Toro or pull out of that Beachcomber, and it causes huge confusion. Then you have the state park that has no sign saying that the people coming off of Yerba Buena have the right of way. That they have a stop sign here, but it doesn't say that these people don't. So they just automatically think, well, I stopped and I see you, so you've got to stop, and they just cut in front of you. In a very dangerous situation. Not a lot's happened there.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
Anybody else for public comment? Seeing none. Up here we go. One more. Come on up.
My name is Harold Liebinger.
Can you repeat that in the microphone, please?
Harold Liebinger. I live, I was former resident on Easter Street, and now I'm a resident on Beachcomber and Panay. Years ago, I saw a sign in front of the park that this park will be closed. That day, I started looking for an updated home and found one on Panay. Now, I've been informed that the council or the city of Morro Bay wants to update this park. This park is in total violation of all new pollution laws. All of them. They're in violation of visual, dust, smell, and state nuisance laws. I think that council should go back to the records of homework and listen to the public about this decision of going into a state park, which the state park can't seem to find the funds to keep it up or to continue it, and it also violates that it's in a housing tract. The new laws of housing and residence laws. I think council should recommend to the parks commerce that they are dropping their idea for taking on responsibility of the state park. It also falls short of the state HOT Act, which was adopted in 1987. They are falling short of the idea that if you take on responsibility of this park, you're taking on responsibility of my health. The park stinks, and it's full of dust and other toxic things that will hurt my and will give me bad health. Morro Bay will make no revenue off of this idea of the 25 additional spots for parking. All Morro Bay is doing is continuing the factor that they're not interested in the health of all the people on Beachcomber. I want council to hire someone.
A few things to comment on after public comment. Joe, when Mr. Podesto was here, he talked about having a conversation with you about sponsorship of the 4th of July. If you had something you wanted to add to that or your choice.
Certainly. Good evening. I did meet with Dan regarding the 4th of July and the, their request for co-sponsorship. I gave them the guidelines for co-sponsorship. We have agendized that item for the Recreation Parks Commission to review. That review will be taking place on the 21st of this month, which is a week from this Thursday, in this very meeting. Meeting starts at 5:30. Our agenda should be posted by the end of the week.
Okay, thank you very much. And then I wanted to also clear up something that was mentioned about comments that Mr. Livick may or may not have said about parking on Toro Lane. And it is my fault that if I misrepresented anything that Mr. Levick said, I asked a lot of questions, and we had a very wide-ranging conversation, and I asked a lot of what if this, what if that, what if this, what if that. So none of it reflects anything but just thinking about this or thinking about that, and I certainly wouldn't want anything that I may have misrepresented. I wouldn't want to misrepresent any opinion he may have had or just our discussion, but I will take full credit for just a super wide-ranging discussion and appreciate the openness that we shared about many things in relation to that entire neighborhood, that entire intersection. And then last, yeah, that's all. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Anything, George? No. Nancy? Noah? Okay, thanks for that on public comment. That'll move us on to consent. And do we have any items to pull on consent from anyone?
I'd like to pull A2, A3, and A5 for public information.
A2, A3, and A5. Anything else? We have a motion to approve items A4, A6, A7, A8, and A1.
I would move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? None. Motion carries. Leads us to item A2.
Yes, A2 is the resolution amending council policies and procedures regarding meeting guidelines and procedures, and basically updating it to be more open and inclusive of public comment for our open sessions. And I just wanted to thank you, Mr. Mayor, for your time in working on this with the city attorney and bringing it forward, and I think it's a major improvement. So I... with that, unless there's any other comments, I'll move approval of A2.
Any second?
Second.
Make a motion. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Item A2 carries. That moves us on to A3.
Yes, A3 is the approval for lease site 93-95/93W-95W-901915 Embarcadero, and it was mentioned during public comments about the length of the lease, the 40-year lease terms, and the investment to receive that length of the lease, and I wanted to give our staff a chance to respond to that.
Thank you. Good evening, Mayor and Council. The lease itself is actually in the staff report. It's attached, and the term is in the staff or is in the lease, available online, as is the financial commitment that the lessee was willing to commit to. So nothing was hidden there. That was all out there on the lease and publicly available. The lease term was based on a combination of the existing years, approximately 4.5 years left on the lease, in addition to the almost $1.1 million worth of investment that the lessee is willing to commit to the project. There is no straight line exact dollars for years protocol or formula that we employ, but it's roughly and historically been approximately $250,000 worth of investment gets 10 years of lease term. There's also other variables in the leases and that can change that. We've had some leases get more years for less and some leases get less years for more. It depends on the other various terms in the lease that the lessee is willing to commit to. The lessee is taking considerable risk. He's taking on slips in front of his lease site, a considerable redevelopment on his site, as well as slips in front of the lease site next door. This process was started in November 2011 and went through the whole Planning Commission and City Council concept approval as well, so it's been well vetted.
Thank you. recognizing that we have had open session public hearings on this item, and that there is a significant investment going into the area, particularly on the slip side.
We've got a press release going out, but basically it'll be in three phases. We'll go over exactly how the Tidelands Trusts work and how we came in ownership of those Tidelands Trust leases. So go through the whole history of how that occurred and when we incorporated, and then we'll go by each lease one by one, explain the history of it and where it's at right now and how long that lease is for, and how the rent is calculated, and how we do go through some of those improvements that Eric just meant. And then we'll talk at the end basically about closed session and how that's handled and how there might be changes in that philosophy. We'll also go over the lease management policy, which was approved in 2005.
Okay, and briefly, would there be public input opportunities there?
Absolutely. As a study session, we're going to be very informal. We're going to have a round type of table or square type table. I'd like to have everybody at the table. And, in fact, it's going to be kind of a give and take right in the middle. If they want to interrupt the presentation, they can join in and ask questions.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Questions for Eric on the lease agreement. There are performance clauses in there. If the performance for some of the installations of the docks and such, then that would bring it back for discussion on the lease agreement terms. Is that correct?
There are timeline deadlines that the leasee must adhere to in his different phases of the land side and the water side, and then if he gets through concept approval to take on the water side in front of the next lease site. So there are time triggers to begin construction on each of those phases, and then there's a time trigger at the end where he has to have everything completed.
Thank you.
And those are all in the lease.
Okay, thanks. Go ahead, Norm.
Ready?
Yeah.
I'll move approval of A3.
Sorry.
I second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. Motion carries. Item A5?
Yes, A5 is our budget review, the anticipated process of the budget review. And just get in here. I wanted to pull this item for public information and to give Ms. Slayton a chance, Ms. Luker a chance, to review the anticipated budget process for this year. Yeah, just basically run through our anticipated dates.
Good evening, council members and Mayor Irons. I'm going to be kind of a little, clawed here because I need to get to the front. I was already back at my item in anticipation.
Let me jump in there because I have it here.
I got it.
So basically, we have the worksheets. The departments will be working on their budget projections and requests. March 11th, we'll be getting expenditure and revenue estimates. March 29th, the preliminary budget to the city manager will occur April 12th. Preliminary budget to the council, April 26th.
I think she's ready.
Oh, you're ready. Okay, great.
Good.
Your voice is so much better than mine, too, so go ahead.
Oh, I don't know about that. Thank you. Yes, what we try to do is draft a calendar up so that you can have an idea of the process. And so what I've done is I've sent the worksheets out to all of the departments. With those worksheets, they were provided with salary schedules, some fixed items like our insurances that come out, and, of course, the cost allocation plan. Those items were put into their budget line items. They will complete their revenue projections for their budgets and their expenditure projections, and they'll send them back to me by March the 29th. That gives me about a week or so to take a look at them and see how everything fits. Does the budget balance? Are we out of balance? Have people asked for things that that maybe it's just too much money? And I'll usually work with the departments and say, you've asked for $1 million more than you did last year. How come? I need to know because I don't know where I'm going to come up with that money. And so I do work with the departments. If they do ask for an excessive increase to their budget. If not, we try to do our best to see what we can do to work it out. In the past, we have done across-the-board cuts, and so if I felt that everybody, you know, everything needed to be cut by 5%, it was pretty much imposed on all departments equally. Once I get through that basic process, then I meet with the city manager, and I provide her with the worksheets, and we go through the same analysis, getting things put together, and that'll happen right around the 12th of April. By the 26th, we will have a preliminary budget that we can get current 12-13 budget into the 13-14 fiscal year so that we can continue operating, and then we can either have more budget workshops or whatever council feels is best. How's that?
That was great. I definitely appreciate getting that information out there to the public and adding those dates to my calendar, the workshop dates. I'm curious to confirm, we did talk about this a little bit yesterday at the goal setting, but to ensure that the goal setting process will inform the budget that's proposed and our priority goals will influence how the money is allocated to a certain degree.
Yes, it will. The meeting that I have with the city manager on the 12th, that's where we'll be working that part of it out. I'll bring her the budget worksheets. She and I'll go over, those, and then she'll, of course, let me know how this all fits in with the goals. So we will be doing that.
Thank you.
Thanks for that. Do you have a motion on that?
Yes, I'll move approval of A5.
I'll second that. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? None. Motion carries. That completes our consent calendar. And how about a short 10-minute recess? Is everybody good for that? Okay, good. Thank you. We'll be back in 10 minutes. Hello. Welcome back. We're back from our break, and we're moving on to item C1, resolution number 15-13, adopting the mid-year budget amendment, and that would go to Ms. Susan Slayton, our finance director.
Thank you. Good evening, Mayor Irons and council members. Before you tonight is a revised mid-year budget review. The important changes from last meeting's presentation are the additional revenue source to the general fund of $24,000 as a result of a reduction to the property tax administration fee due to a change in the calculation method. And that's something that we learned about from the county after the February meeting. Also, the $25,000 reduction to the expenditure budget of the Visitor Center budget due to the new Tourism Bureau contract. These two adjustments allowed for the $30,000 council contingency as directed at the February 26th meeting. And just for notation purposes, that direction is on page 6 of the minutes.
Thank you.
Thank you. There are no other changes to the report. Staff wishes council to adopt the mid-year budget as presented tonight. Also, please review the recommendations from the Measure Q committee, and which asked council to reallocate most of the $445,000 of storm drain carryover to the pavement management plan, and to allocate the unbudgeted Measure Q funds of $166,000, less the $11,800 of funds requested by Police Chief Christie for the repeaters and mobile radios. The remaining $154,200 was suggested for the pavement management plan. Council may take action on these Measure Q requests tonight as recommended, or make changes to those suggested allocations, or defer the Measure Q comments to the 2013-14 budget process, whatever council chooses to do. As requested at the February 26th meeting, the council was provided with details of the contract expenditures. And this concludes my report, and I will be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Layton. I'd be bringing it back to council for questions. Noah? No? Nancy?
I have probably more of a comment than a question, but I spoke with Mrs. Layton about this today. And on page 90, where we talk about expenditures, and she just spoke to the $30,000 that we found, or that she would.
Some of those or a portion of those should be allocated either to some immediate need that has to do with streets or storm drains, or if there should be some held back for some adjustments. But it seems like the thrust of this is just to keep putting that money into paving streets. But I direct my question to Mr. Livick on maybe your input or comments on recommendation, if you had some, for some allocations for this.
Yeah, and I apologize in the lateness of my comments, but it came to mind when I was working on my goals for council about, you know, one of the reasons that we have a problem expending storm drain money is quantifying the issue. I think we could probably dig down and expose any storm drain that was put in 50 years ago and not find it. We might find a hole in the ground where it existed. Our storm drain master plan dates from about 1987, I believe, was the last time we looked at a storm drain master plan, and that only addressed building of new projects. It didn't address suggested maintenance items, nor did it address any of the modern storm drain features that the cities need to think about, what the best management practices are for low-impact development, for not just private development, but for also the public development when we reconstruct our roads, and also those water quality BMPs, because I think, quite frankly, if we just rely on new development to install those BMPs and the greening of the community, we're never going to meet our water quality goals and TMDLs in Morro Bay. So I looked at maybe what we should do is, plan, take a step back, and I understand the urgency to spend the dollars on physical improvements, but to take a step back and, look at a plan for how we would spend those storm drain dollars. And I have a rough number on what a storm drain management plan could possibly cost, and in the neighborhood of approximately $86,000 to prepare that updated storm drain management plan. So that would be my recommendation for at least a portion of those storm drain dollars to go towards updating our storm drain management plan, so we can, like our pavement management plan, we can allocate those resources in a cost-effective, logical manner, rather than we find a hole in the pavement and we dig it up and find there's no storm drain there, is our usual method of storm drain repairs. And hopefully that answered your question.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for that. So I guess that brings up the question on whether or not planning would be an appropriate fund for the Measure Q HQ funds, whether or not it's just for project type of work or if it could be spent on plans. And so not to, unless there are other comments on this, and not to belabor this too much, I suppose we could move forward on the recommendation, but maybe re-agendize storm drain master plan and thinking and just consider some of the funds we have from Measure Q to invest in a storm drain master plan. And just welcome any comments from council on that. Any other comments on that?
Yeah, I do. I think that's a good idea. And updating the plan would definitely be a more efficient way for us to utilize the money. I agree with that completely. I like the idea of moving forward and bringing that back. And I would request to respect the Measure Q committee that we ask for their
sure.
input on that.
Yeah.
I think that's where you're going with it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the best way to go. And at that point, with the approval of the committee or not, we can then discuss funding for the update.
Okay.
But tonight we can adjust those funds to the pavement management plan and work with them from there. Is that the way you see it?
So in other words, just go ahead and allocate all the funds to the pavement management plan.
Yeah, I suggest.
And management partners study, and you know, whether or not it's in a contingency fund or a council contingency fund or general fund, I don't think it matters too much to me. Does anybody have any comments on that?
I think it's important to keep it in a separate fund or at least designated. From what I heard, the concept, and I think it's a good one, is that it's reserved for use on special projects as necessary and agreed to by the council. So one of the things that when I read it, we did previously have a contingency fund that was available to each individual council member. It was $1,000 a year of general fund money. So it might be beneficial to recognize that it's a council as a whole contingency fund or another term.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's going to be beneficial for us to have that available if mm-hmm. something comes up that we need to move on.
Yeah. I think, pardon me, I also, it seems as though coming into the budget discussion as well, I think there's, whether or not it would stay in as a contingency, council contingency fund, I think we could always make that adjustment come budget time as well and, you know, float it right into the general fund. So, you know, for the time being, I don't think it really is too much harm there.
I still have to disagree with you, Mr. Mayor. It does not look good there, especially as we're going into salary negotiations with staff. I think we really need to move it. If you don't want to put it in the special fund, in the general fund, I would say keep it in a special projects fund. That's my opinion.
So, kind of semantics, special projects.
But a contingency fund for council.
Any other comments on that? So, special projects that would be for council. Seems right.
Well, it depends on what the special project is. I mean, we'd all have to vote on it.
Exactly.
But I mean, I don't know if we need to hire a. Oh, Susan has something to say.
Good, thank you.
We can put this $30,000 into the 515 Trust and Agency Fund. And it can be set aside. This is the same spot where we put the $5,000 that we got a few years ago from Barry Ross that was designated for the individual council members. We can put it in that same area, put it in as a $30,000 deposit into that, and then if council decides as a whole that there's a particular, you know, thing they want to do with it, they just let me know and... You know, when you take action on it, and we take it out of there.
That makes good sense to me.
You happy with that?
Yes.
Makes okay sense with me as well. Do you have any comments on that?
Well, if we don't spend it, we can let's just revisit at the budget session.
I think it's kind of a moot point, but yeah. It I don't think it makes too much difference. I'd be happy with it. Oh, yeah. Okay. Then that's and the 516 trust agency fund. Any other comments on that? And so what else? So we've covered the Measure Q funds. That's properly allocated there. Can we just go ahead and approve this as stated?
You can
with the exception of the council contingency fund.
Yes, you can. You can adopt the resolution and approve the Measure Q recommendations, and everything will move through just fine.
Okay, do I have a motion on that? Or would I like to make a motion on that? I make a motion that we adopt the resolution as written, with the City Council contingency fund put into the 516 trust agency fund allocated there.
Second.
Any discussion?
Just to confirm that we are adopting the recommendations from the Measure Q committee in that resolution.
Absolutely. It's we would be adopting Resolution 1513 as written and allocating the Measure Q funds as recommended.
Okay.
Is that clear? And we have a second on that? Yes. Okay. No discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? None. Motion carries. Okay, moving on to item D1, new business. Mr. Livick, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm going to move to the podium so I can put an exhibit up on the screen and refer to it as needed.
Okay, thank you.
And if I could get assistance. Oh, thank you. As Mr. Mayor stated, this is item D1, the intent to abandon a portion of Toro Lane. And we're following the procedures as identified under, I guess I'm not going to grab the pointer. Anyway, as most of you know, Toro Lane is in the northern area of Morro Bay, north of Yerba Buena Street, which is at the signalized intersection off of Highway 1. Thank you.
Thank you.
Toro Lane here, little bit dark. Yerba Buena is about right here. Highway 1. Out here, North Point. Thank you. North Point subdivision up here, Beachcomber Avenue here, and then the Pacific Ocean out here. So now that we're all in the same place, the request was filed with the city through a application for abandonment, which is identified in the city's master fee schedule. The applicant did pay the fees for abandonment and coastal development permit for the abandonment of this portion of Toro Lane right-of-way. As the was identified in public comment, the city acquired Toro Lane, at least this portion of Toro Lane, through the configuration of the freeway. The state acquired it as a frontage road,
because during the construction of the freeway, these properties had direct access onto Highway 1. The state does not like direct driveway access onto their freeways, so they created this frontage road, which would come out to Yerba Buena. When the freeway construction was near complete, the right-of-way was relinquished back to the county at that time, and upon incorporation, it became the city's right-of-way. This is a unique piece of right-of-way in Morro Bay, because typically, as with Beachcomber, Yerba Buena, and many of the other streets, we do not own those streets in fee title. The state always acquires the right-of-way in fee, so they actually purchase the property and own the real property under it. Most streets, we have a public easement over them. So as long as the public needs that street, there's an easement over it for the public enjoyment and use of that street. So the applicant has applied for an abandonment of this portion of Toro Lane. Staff identified that this wider area extends north to the North Point subdivision, and we would recommend that if it move forward, we also abandon that section of Toro Lane also. I'm going to refer back to my notes to make sure I get everything covered here. The Planning Commission did hear this item, and they made the findings that it is consistent with the general plan and the circulation element of the general plan and no longer needed for its intended purpose. We did receive public comment about, and which you heard tonight, regarding parking along Toro Lane, and you received a packet from the applicant about a potential reconfiguration. My recommendation against parking is in this area, while it is generally gently sloped, wasn't wide enough to have head-in parking along there. It's only about 17 feet wide, and our minimum parking space would be 20 feet wide, therefore would not have enough space for head-in parking there. This area of the abandonment is fairly steeply sloped. We have a creek running down through here, which is designated ESH, and we have an associated ESH buffer along there. So it doesn't lend itself to parking. With the revised proposal from the applicant and maybe a way to acquire a piece of his property in a lot line adjustment, there is about 27 feet across here and potentially could create that parking, although I have not looked at it in detail and looked at a preliminary design for that. But it appears that that is very workable for parking along that section of Toro, probably not along here. With the proposed abandonment, utility companies get to reserve through the Streets and Highways Code piece to the council, and there are copies in the back of the room. The resolution changed ever so subtly, and in the finding sections talks about the intention to abandon rather than findings of abandonment. And I thank Mr. Schultz for clarifying that with me. Again, the Planning Commission has found it consistent with the California Streets and Highways Code, the General Plan, and the Coastal Act. The project is an exempt project from CEQA, and based on these findings, staff recommends that the abandonment process move forward to the public hearing that is required to do the final abandonment of Toro Lane, and that the city adopts resolution 18-13, setting the date for that public hearing for, I believe it's April 23rd, 2013, at this location, so that you may receive any further comment on the abandonment and receive any further comments from the public utilities regarding that abandonment. And that concludes my staff report, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Rob. Are there any questions for Mr. Livick? Rob, did you get, I know you already left there, the one of the drawings that we had from the letter of the applicant was supplied to us. Do you have a picture of that that could be shown on the overhead?
Yes, I do, and I'll put that up there on the overhead.
AGP? That's a good attempt. Yeah, thanks. Oh, wow. Look at you go. A little challenge there. Nice. All right, thank you.
So, this is what we're talking about, that the applicant has proposed to basically do a lot line adjustment so this becomes city property and we have enough depth along there to provide head-in parking, and he would acquire this property and the city would still abandon this section of property while reserving this public access easement.
Okay.
I will note that you can see a rather well-worn path that comes off of Toro Lane and goes through this property. This is an informal pathway. At this point, people that are using it do trespass when they use that access. And really nothing in this abandonment changes the access rights to that property. You might just be trespassing about 40 feet further instead of all the way down here. Also, this pathway ends up in environmental sensitive habitat area, some ash. It might not be the best place to have pedestrians access the beach. In the council packet, there's an exhibit that shows a wider view of Toro Lane and this property to the north. I believe it was in the 80s, they dedicated a pedestrian access easement along the north side of their property that has really never been used for pedestrian access along there. So there is legal access along there, although when I was out there, I noticed there is a chain across that legal access, and we'll need to resolve that with the property owner.
That would be which colored one here?
The one that's up on the screen with the pink and the blue and the white, it appears.
Or is that yellow? Well, then page 7 looks... Page 7 is a different one. And then page 7 shows purchasing the remainder of the surplus land. So it looks to me like he's giving us more than one actual option here. And then
yeah,
you've got the green shaded area. And
Like the applicant said, he did get this information late in the day. Based on my discussions with him, I think this is, you know, one of the preferred options to garner that extra parking. But I'm sure if you wanted to, the applicant, Dr. Fry, could explain, or the applicant's agent could explain it in a little bit more detail if you so choose.
Thanks, Rob.
Not necessarily. I just think it's nice to see that he's put so much work into these different options. Thank you.
Okay. Seeing that, any comments from council?
I'll start off. Thank you for putting together this packet, Mr. Fry, and I want to double check, will this be able to be introduced into the public record?
Yes, it will be.
Okay,
and I'll just clarify a little bit. It's important you understand this is a very unique property in Morro Bay in that almost all of our streets are not owned in fee underlying. So it's a little bit of a unique situation. Usually when we have an abandonment of a street, you abandon it and that's the end of the discussion. The abandonment, automatically that property underneath goes directly to the property owner that abuts it. So we have a little of a different situation here, and that in front of your tonight is not really what would happen to that property after it becomes just fee owned by you. Really the only question is whether you want to proceed with the abandonment proceedings on whether you think it's a good idea to abandon. And I know it gets kind of convoluted because you want to know what you're going to do with it once it's abandoned, but that would actually be a separate hearing item on what you do with the property once it is abandoned. So under the Streets and Highway Code, really your question is whether you want to proceed with the abandonment proceedings. You certainly can have preliminary discussions of the possibility with that, but the real question is whether you want to proceed with the abandonment proceedings.
Yeah, thanks for clarifying that. And to get to my bottom line, I'm not ready to proceed. I think we need some more information about the possibilities and to give a little more time for the public to look at those, considering how much interest this has generated. So my suggestion is that we provide staff, if the council is in favor of this, with some clear direction to analyze the different parking scenarios, including what could be possible with the existing situation, no change, and with some of the proposals of land adjustments and shifts that the applicants brought forward. Not spending a lot of time on that, but giving us a better idea about what benefits this could or may bring back to the city, so that we can all take some time and look at that before we initiate the next steps. I think that respects the applicant's time. Make sure that we're not getting into a situation that we're not going to follow through with or be comfortable following through with, and of course gives the public some more time. In my observation of this process and visiting the site with the applicant back in January and watching the Planning Commission meetings as well as talking to neighbors and concerned citizens, it's really clear to me that the parking is a key issue, and it's been exaggerated even further by the proposal with the state parks. It's really brought home, between that and the Cayucas Morro Bay connector, just how much changes will occur in this area. And I spent some time going through the Morro Bay Cayucas connector EIR and specifically focusing in the North Point area and what the EIR contains, and there's some really significant statements in there recognizing that there are times where there isn't a lot of use, but that currently with the existing conditions, which don't include the connector, no changes with the state parks, and I would suggest a tourism economy that's bound to grow further as we're working on, that there's increased traffic congestion, parking demand, motorcycle interaction, safety issues. It's you see many comments there. Implementation of the proposed Cayucas Morro Bay connector would result in terms of property value to the applicant as well, and I'd be interested in if we can develop terms that fit for the city's needs as well as the applicant's that those revenues would go towards the development of the parking and staging area. So those are my comments.
Nancy?
I think a lot of Mr. Smuggler's comments and concerns would be answered if we were to approve this tonight and initiate the process to consider the abandonment. Bring it back, then it comes back, I believe, as a public hearing item. We can look at all these different options, the different parking possibilities. I really think that we should move forward with this. In terms of parking, I have another thought that concerns me. The state park is there, whether we like it or not. It is owned by the state of California. We are the city of Morro Bay, so there's not really a lot we can do about that. But my concern is, do we really want to develop a parking lot right outside the state park where people can park there, walk into the state park, thus avoiding the state park admission fees? I don't think that's a relationship we want to develop with the state park. And I think that's something we need to look at very closely. And I think the best way to do that is to move ahead with the process and bring this back as a public hearing item, looking at all of our options.
Thank you, Nancy. George?
Well, I'm just going to echo Nancy completely because I'm no use repeating. She hit it right on the head.
Okay. Christine?
I think everyone makes good points this evening. I definitely was a bit surprised by the public interest in this item. I think it's getting more intense every day. So my question is one of procedure, because I just simply don't know. Is there any way to bring the hearing, this item back for a public hearing without discussing the resolution?
Absolutely. You can absolutely do that if you desire. You could bring it back as a public hearing item, just as a general discussion of that area and the potential abandonment of it. And then from that hearing, you could then go into this resolution at the next hearing and then have the public hearing. The two that are required in the Streets and Highways Code is this first one of your intention, which really is just, like I said, setting the public hearing, but there's nothing that prevents you from having a public hearing before the intention to flesh out some of these ideas with a better description of just intention abandonment that would allow you to discuss potential uses for the property after abandonment.
I would be very comfortable to move forward in that direction, where we would bring it back to a public hearing. We could maybe direct staff at that point too about some questions, okay? But I'm not really comfortable with the resolution because I feel like sort of I don't want to promise one thing or another, and the resolution makes me a little uncomfortable that we would be doing that.
Thank you. I have a question, Rob, on this. I just wanted to cover something. Well, first of all, I did meet with Dr. Fry out there as well and walked the property, so that was very informative. Thank you. The other part of this, and this has gone to the Planning Commission, but this proposal that we have tonight wasn't vetted as the Planning Commission had seen it. It was kind of a different type of proposal at that time, correct?
Correct. And typically that would not be their role in an abandonment. Their role would be to make the general plan consistency findings under California Streets and Highways Code.
Right. And I think just to point out, I mean, what we're looking at now, the Planning Commission didn't have an opportunity to look at this and maybe, in more favor. But, I think there's some valid points here tonight. And the other part is whether it's moved forward with a resolution, it still has to go through a hearing process. Or if we request that it just go through a hearing process, we're going to come back. It's going to go through this resolution to approve the intent and then approval potentially if it all was successful through a hearing process. So, I don't see any harm in doing the hearing myself. I think it answers some of the concerns from the public, and it doesn't really matter whether there's three steps and we approve it and go through two hearings, or go through a hearing and then two steps for a resolution. It seems like the same process, and it respects what we're hearing from some of the concerns from the our residents and the applicant. It gives him a fair opportunity to address this in a hearing format. So I'd be in favor of
a property. And by the way, I was one of the people who, long time ago, it seems like, went down and walked this property. This is someone who's bought a piece of property and wants to build on it. And I think the longer we hold him up, the harder it is to actually get his building done. And just one final comment in terms of public comment tonight. I was keeping track of all the people who came up to comment, and almost totally, well, actually, very, very few of those people even live in the area. So I'm not sure why this is so important to them. They don't park there. They don't live there. It's not an impact on their streets. I think they just kind of have to come and share their opinions, which is their right. But I think if somebody's going to talk about somebody's right to build on his property, it needs to be people who are in that neighborhood and who have something, should have something to say about what's going on.
Thanks, Nancy. I think the other part of that, our responsibility up here, is it is a public piece of property. So I think looking at it globally in the sense of our community, I think that's our responsibility as well. Noah, you had a comment?
I would absolutely agree with your comments, Mr. Mayor. Our first priority here is taking care of the public trust. That includes the neighbors, the overall residents, and future visitors. So I think this is a way of moving through the process that will ultimately, if it goes forward, strengthen the project, would be my prediction. Or it gives better clarity to the applicant so he's not spinning his wheels too hard. And he does still have the ability to build without this abandonment, as has been pointed out. So, you know, this has been by choice, and I think we're respecting that. And in watching the Planning Commission hearings, there are definitely concerns from the neighborhood as well. And I think going through this effort will help recognize those concerns and perhaps come up with a plan that everyone, or for the most part, we can recognize as a benefit to the city, and the property of the applicant can recognize as a benefit to them as well.
Okay, thanks for that. So as far as direction on this, the recommendation to approve the resolution, that would be, I get the general feeling that it wouldn't be in favor of approving the resolution. Do you need direction to move this to a hearing item, or would they, pardon me? Okay. I would make a motion that we not adopt resolution number 18-13, but direct the applicant and staff to come forward in the form of a hearing, public hearing, and work out the details of the development and or partnership and or acquisition of the property as it's laid out in our report up here. Is that clear enough? Direction? Okay.
Seconds for with the friendly amendment request.
I beg your pardon?
Second with the friendly amendment request.
Go ahead.
I'd like to be clear that we'd like to see some scenarios that look at existing parking opportunities and maximized parking opportunities, so we really get the clear vision of what the site could provide.
Okay, so I would amend my motion to explore and evaluate all the parking options and scenarios for that area.
Great.
Do I have a second on that?
Yes, second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
No.
Motion carries 3-2.
Can I ask a follow-up question then? For the special encroachment permit and the public access that was mentioned as part of this, should we bring that as a future agenda item to review some of the history of what went into that decision, so on?
The property to the north there,
yes.
That has the...
It's 3440 Toro Lane.
Yes, the Comer, I believe, property that has the driveway improvements on the public right-of-way with the special encroachment permit and a coastal development permit.
Correct. Yes, please.
I guess that's at the discretion of council. We can bring that item back at that same public hearing. We could give that information there or at a separate hearing.
Okay. Well, I think it's important for us to follow up and answer some of those questions about that as well. It might.
I think we're outside. I think we're kind of outside the item right now.
A little bit, but we've heard those issues, so we'll look in to make certain they're in compliance. If they're in compliance with their permits that were issued or non-compliance, then it would.
This is based on council direction from the last memo to move forward with an RFP for a project manager, project planning manager, or consultant to help us through the next phases of the wastewater treatment plant project. And you may notice that I took the liberty of calling the project a water reclamation facility. Wastewater treatment plant project, the WWTP in the industry is almost entirely being replaced by water reclamation facility. And I thought, given our new direction, we might as well embrace that terminology. So I took the liberty of, in the RFP, of changing the title of the project. It's nothing more than that. But it is a change in the title. Also, you'll notice that there are several typos in the RFP. We did work rather quickly on this in putting it together, and I used a sample or a previous RFP, so I apologize to Mayor Irons by leaving the former mayor's signature block at the end of the contract, and I apologize to the city clerk for leaving the former city clerk's name in there. Also had a submission date of sometime in June of 2009 that has been corrected. I would recommend that those RFPs be submitted by the end of the this month so that we can move forward rather quickly. The RFP itself, what I am proposing in this RFP is to select a consultant that can help us work through several issues that we'll have in relocating the wastewater treatment plant. And those issues include treatment technology, as I mentioned last time, treatment technology, and I think we need to address energy use, the type of water, the level of water quality that we're looking at, and the siting requirements of the various types of treatment. Type of disposal. During the coastal permitting process, we've received many public comments from the community about addressing the ocean outfall and whether we should be looking at land application, subsurface disposal, or stream discharge. The level of reclamation. Addressing the urban area uses, rural agricultural uses, and groundwater recharge. Looking at our biosolids options on with the former project, we were looking at basically hauling all of our biosolids off-site for off-site composting in Kern County. And I think now is an opportunity to look at that. And then probably, you know, one of the most important factors is siting criteria. What developing the criteria for siting that new wastewater treatment plant and ultimately looking at its location. In addition to that, I've added additional task item that doesn't appear in this staff report, but in one that I've been working on, would be a scheduling component, is to refine that draft schedule that we have in the next item to get us more details on bringing us from where we are now to where we need to be, and whatever what length of time accomplishes those tasks. Also, a question in the RFP is, I've used previous selection criteria and scoring that we've done on other RFPs, but there was some talk about having a differing selection committee. So there's a section highlighted in there about typically the selection committee is city staff, or in the case of previous projects, city and district staff. But there's been some question on whether we want to have the wastewater committee from the council be on the selection team, or have a member of the planning commission on the selection team, or a member of the public on the selection team. And I leave, you know, that's a question for council, how you want to formulate that selection team. The schedule for the art of that those errors in the staff report.
That's okay, Rob. Thank you for your work on getting this out. Thanks. Bring it back to council for questions and start down with George. Do you have any questions?
No.
Christine?
Not right now, thanks.
Nancy? Noah?
One question would be, you have a fairly tight time schedule already drawn out. Did you feel like there was any leeway for us to tighten that up a little bit and still be successful with getting a good applicant and having a good review process?
You know, we could probably cut a week off the proposal time, getting it in more towards the first part of April rather than, you know, that second week in April. You know, I'm not sure that I do want to give consultants enough time to give it the thought that it needs,
yeah,
and that we get good proposals on it. You tighten it up too much and you limit the responses. From my experience being both on the private sector and the public sector side, if there's not enough time, it may not be worth the consultant's time to prepare a proposal for it if they're crunched.
Hmm. Yeah, and it is a very important position. So it's also an opportunity to glean interesting perspective from the applications themselves by getting good ones.
Definitely. And typically what you do in the through the interview process is you use all the proposals. And when you're interviewing a consultant, you may find something better out of one proposal. You might tease that out of maybe a consultant that didn't include that in there, but would be willing to include that into their scope. Very rarely do you find the perfect proposal. It's generally, you know, if you could assemble your own team from the proposals that you get, that would be an optimal selection, but that doesn't happen. But what you try to do is get some of that information from maybe giving away secrets, and hopefully there's no consultants listening, from one person's proposal that you'll use in the interview with another consultant. Can you do this also?
Hmm. And then my last question has to do with the selection committee. And just to confirm, as far as the Brown Act goes, Mayor Irons and myself are the subcommittee to the JPA, which doesn't necessarily mean that we would have to be the committee members to this hiring process. We would have that flexibility. Okay.
Christine, you had a question?
I did. Thank you for returning to me. I had a question about how wide you're going to cast the net for applicants. Just walk me through the process. It's my first time doing this.
So, of course, our first advertisement is typically on the city's website. We'll put it on industry websites. So I'll put it on ASCE's, American Society of Civil Engineers, American Public Works Directors. We'll get it out to the planning APA, American Planning Association's local website. We can advertise it in the paper. people are looking for proposals. We will also probably contact firms that we know that do this work and make sure that they know about this proposal. So the larger planning, engineering firms that would be well suited to do this work, and individuals for that part that also perform this work. So we'll be casting a very wide net, hoping that we find that that fit for the city of Morro Bay.
Okay, that lucky person. Thank you.
All right. Dad, let me just make one real quick.
I just want to make a comment. I bet you've done this before, right?
A couple times, yeah.
Okay.
Thanks. Rob, I guess I just wanted to echo some earlier conversations that we had on, and, you know, and I appreciate the Mr. Smuckler's desire to, you know, expedite this process as we want to expedite so much of this, but, you know, I feel, you know, at this point, the importance of being methodical and making, you know, this type of decision very thoughtful and methodical, that we get the, you know, we're doing the right thing as we work through it. So, you know, if it's within a week or something like that, I think we're being diligent, and I just share that with her, my colleagues on council. The only other question I have on this is the approximate cost. Are you satisfied with that, or do you see a fluctuation in that?
Unfortunately, I'm generally.
Yes, I did. Actually, one was there's been some discussion about energy generation as a part of the project, or at least something that's considered. Do you feel like we have that opening in the current description?
We can add that to the scope of work, is to investigate the if it's the desire of council to add that to the scope of services that we would be looking towards, at least some sort of preliminary look at that. I wouldn't want them to go into great detail on energy generation, but I think they could do when they're looking at the sites, which sites have the better ability, looking at you know, biofuels or wind generation, solar, you know, what that aspect is, to at least give a cursory evaluation of that, and to use that in the ratings for the site selection.
Yeah, great.
We can add that to the proposal.
And it would seem like I agree with your assessment that this should be fairly well pursued, given the hunger in the industry and the number of projects, large projects, that are going on with Paso and Los Osos nearby. There are, from what I understand, very qualified firms already involved there, mobilized in the area. So we may see some interest from them, and I would guess others too. So,
I guess just to be clear on the energy component, and that's just a matter of qualifications. Once we get into evaluating treatment technology, that itself will come out in as part of the dialogue or workshop. But as far as what we may be looking for in a consultant or an applicant in this case, would be someone that might have that expertise. I want to be clear with where we're going with Mr.
Yeah, I think they would have probably not be experts. I don't know that we'll find
Sure.
I think we're looking more for a generalist that can lead us through this process.
Okay.
But they need to know that you can use digester gas to create methane to run a diesel engine, or to you know, grow biofuels and harvest that fuel, or what the area is needed typically for solar. In fact, that's bringing up energy, it's one of the new initiatives for the Water Environment Federation, is to make these kind of zero energy footprint plants more of a standard in the industry.
Thank you. How about the selection committee process? Any discussion on that with anybody? Any comments?
My comment would be, I think for this component, I definitely want to open it up for some more advisory role from community members at a later point. But at this point, I'd suggest it's two council members to keep it concise and later on build in other advisory roles for different boards and so on. That's my suggestion anyway.
So just to keep that in mind, I mean, we were talking about making sure we expedite things with the RFP. One thing that could hold it up is the selection committee. And so we should be pretty decisive on what we want to do, or at least if we're going to be reaching out to advisory committees, that we are doing that expeditiously. We're able to get that done within, you know, the time allotted for our receiving our applications back.
You know, I shouldn't have confused it. I for this entire process, I'm suggesting we stick with two representatives from the council, not getting into advisory committees.
Okay.
And I think that's important because that obviously we're going to be working very closely with this manager position, and it will help gauge their abilities and hopefully end up with the selection of the best applicant.
I thanks for that. I like the idea of entertaining what, you know, who else could be involved in that, so long as it doesn't drag it out and slow down the process. You know, we can start with the subcommittee as the selection committee for this process for right now, but should we, you know, have any input from people that we might think are qualified to sit on that committee, maybe we can bring that back and just entertain that with council and see if that's something that they'd want to approve. But I think for right now, good point. I think for this juncture to Christine, you have a comment?
Well, I think that my understanding after our last JPA meeting was that it would be copacetic for each of the partners to do this kind of evaluation and investigation on their own, and mm-hmm. we've heard reports that that's happening in Cayuga, so I would
sure.
definitely want Morro Bay to also have an equal opportunity to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I would be interested in being involved, but I can understand the nature of keeping it for the JPA subcommittee on the selection of the consultant. So I'm open to that schedule-wise, but very flexible.
So you are open to it?
I am open to that, yeah. If it goes with the schedule that we're looking at, the tentative schedule. Mm-hmm. But again, there may be others too.
So let's narrow that down. The option would be to settle this tonight, unless we want to bring it back in 2 weeks, and then we'd have to definitely settle that now. So, and my opinion is, we either settle it tonight, selection committee, or if we want to give ourselves 2 weeks, we do it at the next council meeting, but no longer than that, because I feel like we should, you know, we're going to approve this tonight, we should have a selection committee ready to go.
Well, if you're willing to serve, are you willing to serve as well on the selection committee?
Sure, as the from the JPA subcommittee?
Or yeah. Separate from the JPA subcommittee.
Sure, yeah.
Because I'm comfortable with you and Councilmember Christine to be on the selection committee for the project manager.
And with I just refer to our city attorney, since there's two of us that serve on that, on the subcommittee, and now we're introducing a third. Are we, you know, where are we going on the Brown Act?
You really should just appoint the two and make sure that they can make the commitment to see it through. I mean, you wouldn't want to, the alternate would be in case you weren't there. And what if, you know, you couldn't have an alternate if you made some of the interviews, you have to be there for all of them. So you wouldn't
exactly.
want to switch halfway through.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I would suggest you just make the two. And if, in fact, something comes up before then, we'd have to come back real quick and have you reappoint.
Was that your
but
question?
I think what I heard another question maybe from... If I could interject really quickly.
Go ahead.
I think that my concern having heard what the mayor's bringing up, is that is this process separate enough from what two council members have already been doing as JPA subcommittee members?
Yes. I mean, from a Brown Act standpoint, yes. If you feel that they're too involved and maybe have only one set of ideas because they've been together on the JPA subcommittee and you want more of a range of ideas, then that's a separate issue. But from a Brown Act standpoint, they certainly can be on the JPA technical committee and also serve on the selection committee for the
The two who already identified
right.
are. That's correct. But if you add a different person, let's say Councilmember League wants to do it, then how does that play out? I think that's my question. Is that your question too, perhaps, Jamie?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. It is separate, though, because it'll just be as to the selection of the best person for the process to move forward. I wouldn't be talking about what you're looking for in your new wastewater treatment plant, what the negotiations are with the agreement. It's just a single issue is selection of who is the best in that process of selecting who's best to select as your project manager.
And a question for Mr. Leivick. Who on staff, if there are two council members on there, how would the rest of the committee look like? What that would look like from you?
I would think we would want Mr. Keough, myself, and I would propose that we add a planner to the committee also, so we get that maybe brought ideas that engineers typically don't think about on there.
Okay.
You said that on camera, you know. You're on record.
I did.
Okay. So you're clear.
Maybe the city manager, too.
Okay. So you're willing to step down. That would be leave Christine and I as on the selection committee. Okay. If there's no objections to that, are there any other comments? Should we just make a motion? Okay, then I'd make a motion that we approve the RFP as proposed and add that the selection committee would be Christine Johnson and Jamie Irons along with staff.
And I'll second that with the question to confirm that as proposed means clean.
It is a work in progress and we'll continue to refine as we move forward with the process. So we have kind of the preliminary steps, the engaging the consultants that gets us through this very beginning portion. Once we can move on to the next steps would be more details of site specifics, updating the facilities master plan, and for some reason my copy of this cannot be read on an iPad, so, and of course I didn't print out a paper copy because it just cuts it off at the and I didn't memorize it. So the preliminary activities, then we would move on to the more detailed site screening, followed by site selection in the Goldenrod area that brings us out a couple years from now. We would do environmental review and permitting about that same time. Financing really takes place throughout this project. We're starting that process with engaging, looking for grant money, some of the more detailed construction financing will happen towards the a couple of years from now once we have a project in place. And then finally in the red area we move on to design and construction with construction as it was outlined in the public comment, happening about 7 years from now. Like I said, this is a draft project schedule.
I have been conservative with some of the timelines, but as we delve into this project more, this timeline will continue to refine, and we will get more details. I think if we had a goal of acquiring the site, or at least selecting the site by the end of this year, that would be, as I've heard from council before, that would be a good goal to shoot for, is you know, refining those preliminary items and site selection by the end of the year, and that would give us good direction on moving forward with the rest of the tasks that are needed to be done. That really concludes my my presentation on this, and would be happy to take any input, comments, or questions on the schedule.
George, do you have any questions? Christine?
I was just thinking about, thank you for bringing that up, about our discussion last night for goals, and we were looking at goals from a two-year perspective last night. I was wondering if you could just maybe where you would want to be. So you say site selection by December 2013, where you think you might want to be at the end of 2014.
Yes. Facilities master planning well underway, and perhaps nearing completion with facilities master planning. Once you have the facilities master planning done, that really sets the stage on your project design and construction. You know, and we'll need to make some decisions along the way as to what our delivery methods are that we're going to choose. Are we going to go, dare I say, the Los Osos way, not the way they've done it over the years, but they've gone with a design build option. So that can perhaps move the construction faster. Or do we want to move the process that we're proceeding on with this project, the more traditional design bid build process. We'll need to answer the questions on how do we want to operate this plant. We'll need to come back together with the sanitary district at some point in the near future and discuss the JPA, which I don't even have on here as a as an item, but will have to be included on there. And you know, what does that JPA look like? Yeah, is the voting still the same? You know, what is the split of the project cost? That all will those will be decisions that will have to be made also.
Perhaps that would come sometime after site selection.
Yes, I would think once we get done with the preliminary phase of this, you know, later on this year before we get to site selection, I think that would be the time to.
As part of the public workshop that we're planning in early April, and we can advance that discussion as much as possible. So when the project manager comes on board, we're prepared and fit for action.
Yes, that was a valuable discussion that we had earlier, and we talked about bringing to this study session the sites that we had looked at in the past, the selection criteria that was used in the selection of those sites, and basically, you know, kind of tearing that apart and, you know, looking to see if that's the same criteria that we want to use. You know, do we want to, I think, you know, one of the criteria that popped in my mind is, with the exception of the current site, that if any of the sites touched any floodplain, it was thrown out. So we might want to revisit issues like that. We might want to look at what we think the footprint would be for a plant, and I think we may have a different screening when we look at that. We look at those issues. So if we were to propose, you know, one of my favorite types of plants, a facultative lagoon plant, you need a large site area, mm-hmm. a large flat site area. I don't know if that exists here, but it is my favorite. But
thanks for sharing that.
You're welcome. It's because it doesn't require any energy but the sun to operate the plant, really. Minor pumping, but I doubt
almost no biosolids handling, or very limited.
Yeah, it just stays there forever.
Okay, well, that I'd like then, if we need to, I think we should approve this tonight and direct staff to begin that review and analysis of the site options and prepare to present that information along with the other things mentioned at the workshop, so the workshop can actually start to digest some of that information.
Any other comment? Christine, go ahead.
I just wanted to get some direction from staff, I think, on this one. Is that workshop's underway? Is it a study session? Is it a workshop? Could you, because I do appreciate having this agendized every single meeting, mm-hmm. we do tend to go late, and now it's after 9, and it would be great to try and gather some people together, maybe around 6. I know my energy level, too, drops.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks.
Status on study session for wastewater treatment plant. Was that the question?
Yes.
Great.
Thank you.
Go for the study session?
Well, I'm just asking for clarification. I heard workshop, well, and I heard early April. No, it's okay. I mean, semantics is all this council's about.
Sometimes.
It's okay. We try to meet those needs.
Staff sent out an email to the council members about the possibility of their availability for, we called it a study session with council and others. We were looking at the beginning of April, I've got responses back from some of you, but not all of you, on dates that you would be available. My only concern now is that I realize that Mr. Leivick will be gone the first 2 weeks of April for some training, as well as a little bit of pleasure. Much more training than pleasure, though. And so we may be looking at a time after those first 2 weeks, because I think it's important that Mr. Leivick's there.
Like the third week of April.
So perhaps the third week, and I can send that back out to the council members, unless you want to try to do something right here.
We could, or just do it online. I think it's another week there wouldn't hurt, considering that there's some details and a fair amount of information that we can use and prepare for presentation in a way that's clear. It's not information overload, but it's enough of the basic details of each of the different options, obviously the rough screening options, and adding some others that have come to the forefront, so that it's a productive meeting. And whether it's a workshop or a study session, I agree in the intent of keeping it very accessible and open to the public, and that we're fresh for it. So whatever format is going to work the best for that, I'm open to.
Okay, I would hope we could do that. I think there's a desire in the public, and truly we haven't really had this opportunity to go through even part of the process. I know that is happening in Cayucas, is they're really gathering their people together and having this group conversation. So I think that would benefit Morro Bay, and then I think it would be great for, there would be a discussion on what about this, what about that, I've heard about this site, I've heard about that site. It would just be great to just make a list of things.
About basically looking at the rough screening as analysis, using that as the basis for our conversation, looking at the screening criteria that was used to screen those sites down to what made it to the fine screenings analysis, and making sure that that criteria is still valid, that all the sites are still valid. I think, you know, in a public forum, we could take the opportunity, if, who knows, we may have missed a site, I don't know, and to get that input on any additional sites that would need to be looked at as we go through the process. And then feed that information back to the project manager so that they have a running start on one of the task items would be to look at, you know, what that important criteria is for the public to, when you're looking at the site selection. So You know, I think that is, you know, that is a very concerning item, where the treatment plant is going to be, and if we can get a jump start on that, that will help us along, further us along in the schedule and the project.
Any others?
And we think we might have a response from the appraisal of Rigetti by August or April, excuse me.
Let's hope so. Middle April, end of April for sure. So she's.
And since we also talked a little bit about appraisal, is out of that process, we may find some other sites that float to the surface that while we have this person, some relationship with them, we might want to look at having them look at other properties also. She
does ag land, but maybe.
So basically, besides the Rigetti site, we are already starting to look at what our other options are, what site options we're looking at. We're looking into that right now
in regard to our screening process. Exactly. Yes.
Okay.
I mean, we have this list of 17, 18 locations that made it, you know, went through the public process previously. I think that should be the basis on where we start with the site selection. So I'm not sure that, you know, if the council is convinced that the Rigetti site was the one that made it to second in the beauty contest of sites, but was the criteria that we used the correct criteria? Would a different site make it float to the top if we used a different set of criteria?
And it sounds like we're doing the right thing in evaluating that.
Yes, and I think you know, that's one of the tasks that we looked at for this project manager to help us on with. But I think if we can get a jump start on that,
absolutely,
and get some public input and council discussion on it, I think that we'd be further along with the process through that.
No.
And if I could suggest, it would be worthwhile, I think, to throw in the CMC option, not to create a new burden, because there's
shiny
some great
object.
Shiny object. There is some really interesting information, though, already generated about that option from the work that Los Osos did in evaluating that. So I think we could have a little bit of basic detail about what that means. I know that's already in discussion with the public, and we should probably have that as a location that's on the table, at least at this early stage. And then the other option would be the Choro Valley Tri-W, the two options there, because those have been, Choro Valley's been studied and the Tri-W's been brought forward informally to us as a option by the landowner. So I think it'd be worthwhile for us to take this time just to get the basic foundational details on those options as well. Looks like the city attorney has.
Well, not really. I was going to let you go. I think that'll all be vetted in that first study session,
right,
and that'll come out of that, those ideas. Since this is just dealing with the task to keep on the Brown Act issue, I think, you know, we're kind of a little bit farther afield. But I certainly, yes, all of that'll come out of the study session. I'm sure the project manager will pick it up and run with all those ideas, because I don't think there's anything that's off the table except for the current site.
May I ask one more question about site, or should we not discuss another question?
I mean, if you have general questions, I'm going to give you leeway of discussion. But
we're targeting the third week of April.
I'll send out an email tomorrow. I think so. We'll discuss a little bit about schedules before we send it out to you.
Okay. And my last question is in relation to the idea of a technical or a financial advisory committee or both. At what point in the project would you see us looking at that more closely, getting some ideas about how they could be formed and their value, and then deciding on that?
Kind of like a citizens review committee or a blue ribbon committee that,
yeah,
would look at some aspects of the project and advise council. You know, I think that could be formed really, if that's a desire of council, really any at any step in the process, probably earlier is better than later, so that if you're looking for their input all the way through the process, they could be brought in early. You know, maybe that's another topic for the study session, is to look at that.
Okay.
Mr. Lively, what's the time you think that should be allotted for the workshop / study session?
I would say a couple hours at minimum. So maybe, you know, starting at 5 or 5:30, that way. We do have a tendency to talk. I mean, speaking for myself, I can talk a lot. And about wastewater, I could probably talk all night about wastewater if you really want to hear it.
Talk to the pause.
Yes. So I would think, you know, starting at 5:30 or, you know, 6 o'clock, the normal time, and alighting at least 2 hours for discussion. I'm not sure 2 hours is enough, but I think it would be valuable 2 hours spent.
Okay. Any other questions? We feel good about this, Mr. Livick. Everything, we're good with that?
Yes, I am.
Okay. All right.
Last question. We didn't get a chance to provide an update to the public about our meeting with the Regional Water Board. It was,
you know, I thought about that too. It wasn't on the agenda. I think we'll probably address that at our JPA meeting. So, I mean, it would have been nice to discuss that, but it wasn't on the agenda. I didn't feel as though we could run through that.
You could do it. You could have done it under your announcements.
Yeah.
So if you want to give an update, no general discussion, but if either one of you wanted to just give a quick update on it, I'm
sure
that's perfectly okay for the public.
And I think if we can get through that, I'd look to Mr. Livick to get some input from you, Mr. Schultz, and perhaps we can cover that. Rob? Rob won.
We did have a meeting with the Regional Water Quality Control Board staff. The interim executive director, Ken Harris, Harvey Packard, Sheila Sonnenberg, and Katie DeSimone from Regional Board staff, along with Mayor Irons, Councilperson Smuckler, myself, Kaika Sanitary District President, Robert Enns, their legal counsel, Tim Carmel, our legal counsel, Rob Schultz, city manager, Andrea Luker, and our capital projects manager, Rick Sarwine.
Bruce
Keough. I think that is it for the attendees. And we discussed the permitting aspects of the project. We do have a permit that's expiring. And I don't have all the dates in front of me, but that was a debate on whether we're following the Federal Register or the permit itself, and we discovered that the permit overrides the Federal Register. So we'll be making our application. I believe it's in December of this year. We have to have a complete application to the regional board. It was earlier than that? Ah, thank you. The expiration date of the permit is February 28, 2014, and so we have to have a complete application in by September 1st, 2013. I was remembering the Federal Register requirements, not the overriding. We will be applying for a full secondary permit with interim effluent limitations. And regional board staff thought that would be enforced with a time schedule order or a cease and desist order to set the time frame that it would allow us to operate under those interim effluent limitations. And that initial time period is 5 years. And any project that we propose is consistent with the integrated water regional water management plan, so that's how Prop 84 money is allocated throughout the region. We discussed a little bit about state revolving fund loan
and making contact with their management staff and looking at the Small Communities Wastewater Grant and making sure that if we still have maintained our eligibility to apply for that, and then we would reapply for that. But based on Administrative Services Directors looking into it, I don't believe that we have a low enough medium household income to qualify for that grant process, but we will verify that. Regional Board staff encouraged us to look at the big picture and look in the long term, but still move as quickly as possible because there are many organizations that are anxious about us progressing with our project, and to feel free to contact them with any questions or any hiccups along the way. And I feel that they were are going to be valuable partners in this process, working with us along the way. I think that summarizes the. Thank you, Mr. Keough, for preparing this staff report that we'll also be hearing at JPA.
Yeah, thanks for that review, and I just wanted to echo that I felt like it was a really positive meeting, and it was nice that the staff, how supportive they were with the direction that we're going, and in their view of what they're seeing, the state overall's goals of managed retreat and focusing on water reclamation, they think that we're going in the right direction with the concepts that we talked about. And again, they were very encouraging about if we find ourselves needing some support to call them, and that they'll actually pick up the phone and help us get in touch with people at the state level if necessary. And they did mention as well that at some point, you know, we'll need to develop the salt and nutrient management plan, which we realize.
I just want to add one more thing. Prior to that meeting, I had made a presentation at the board itself to when they had their board meeting at the Central Coast and updated them on the status of our project. The board members themselves were also very encouraging with the direction that we're proceeding regarding embracing a water reclamation program and the managed retreat, I think, to all the board members made comments about they're looking forward to the new vision for the project.
Okay, thanks, Mr. Leivick. And with that, we'll move on to declaration of future agenda items. Anybody? Christine?
This is a follow-up, perhaps, on updating our council policies and procedures, and I did want to just chat briefly with the city attorney before I fully propose it. You mentioned during our discussion of the lease site negotiation that there would be closed session information, but I'm wondering if we wanted to do perhaps something separate.
I certainly support doing something separate also. We would, during the harbor study session, we'll go into closed session and real property negotiations, but that's just one little part of it. I have traditionally at times, and I certainly agree now, to do a study session on the Brown Act, and have just scheduled that. So yeah, I was planning on doing that probably when the other one is over, sometime in late April, and doing that study session, inviting all the advisory bodies, because we have some new people. I've met with one of the new planning commission member because he's, you know, so important, more of a regulatory decision maker, and I'll meet with the other one. I think next week I'm scheduled to meet with the other new one, but I can't get around to all the new members from all the other advisory bodies, so typically I do it all at once, and we can do that type of study session.
So I'm wondering if then we would want to do, let's say, a closed session report or a Brown Act slash closed session report
Part of the Brown Act study session would be all closed session items, too, and I can go in more depth than I usually do in that study session since that issue's come up lately.
So then would we agendize something like that?
I was just going to make it happen because this is the time of year I do it every year.
Okay, great. Okay. Thank you. Great. I had one other, though.
Good.
While I have the mic on, may I continue? Something. I'm sure there's some standard language.
Yes, we can bring you back some standard language, and then you guys can massage it.
Okay, thank you.
So, and then the gist of that is to basically discuss what a consultant services policy would look like if we wanted to implement one.
So we'll bring back some draft policies,
okay.
And then as Rob had said, you can massage the language mm-hmm. and figure out what you want to do.
Okay.
Perfect, thank you.
Good.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. Nancy, anything?
Well, I've asked about this before, and I think we really need to get it on the agenda. We need to complete our city sign ordinance. I don't know where it is, and I haven't seen it on the Planning Commission agenda in a long time, but I would like to see it in a semi-final form so that we can finish it. Been hanging out there a very long time.
So would we start with an update on where we're at on that? Could we do that?
I can give you a nutshell update on
okay.
where we are.
That's good.
We have a grad student working for us. His thesis is to develop the city sign ordinance, and he is working on that, and he would like to graduate this year, so he has a deadline, self-imposed deadline of June of this year to have it in our hands. So
so would an appropriate agenda item be in June to see the final ordinance?
Perhaps we would bring it to Planning Commission maybe even before June, and then
we could get it by June
back to council for once they've had their input, because we'd like him to incorporate Planning Commission's comments.
That's
into
a good
the
idea.
Great.
Okay, so I would like to see that on our agenda for June so that we can complete our sign ordinance.
Thank you, Nancy. Noah?
Yes, mine's a follow-up from our discussion earlier regarding the storm drain master plan and reviewing the potential funding options and process to update and cost.
So just before we get carried away, the sign ordinance, I would support that, and I'm expecting all of us support that. Okay, so we got support on the sign ordinance. So I'm sorry. No, I just had to do some housekeeping there.
Yeah, it was the storm drain master plan review.
Yeah.
Update of the storm drain master plan.
So in the form of, I think, same question, the desire is to update that. So when we come back with basically a staff report proposal on what it would take to do that, maybe integrate some input from Measure Q committee as well?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Great.
So I'd support that. Anybody else support that? Okay, good. We got unanimous support on that. So it looks like we've got consultant services policy, sign ordinance that we expect back in June from our college student, and storm drain master plan, basically a proposal for that. So we're pretty clear on that? Okay. This looks like we're done with everything. Since we're all no more comments, meeting is adjourned. Thank you.